In a world where extreme competition exists everywhere, what does it take to have success in your career and in life? Join me, Nirvana Chaudhary, as I sit down with some of the most successful individuals to discover the secrets to their success, what continues to drive them, and to hear a few exclusive stories in the process, what drives them and their success code, their mantra for making it bigger. Hello everyone, this is Nirvana Chaudhary. I'm back with my podcast, Making It Bigger. Today I have with me a photographer, an entrepreneur, and more popularly, an author, Ameya Prabhu, who is the founding partner at Nafa Capital. Ameya, thank you so much for making yourself available for my podcast. Such a pleasure having you on board.
Thank you so much, Nirvana. It's an honor and a pleasure being on your podcast today, and really, again, I would say, so delighted to have, shared the Young Global Leader stage with you at the World Economic Forum.
Yes, absolutely. I was about to come to that. Ameya, I've been doing a little bit about your work, your entrepreneurial side. Obviously, you're at a different level, but I'm so intrigued by your search for the universal truth and, your book that you've written on the Rock Babas. But before I get into that, Ameya, the first question I ask everyone is, you've got such a versatile role, many hats that you wear. What is the one success mantra that you follow? What is it that really drives you?
I think if you ask me, the one thing which I really believe in, and at a meeting this morning with a friend, I was sharing the same thing, is I think one should do whatever that gives one peace of mind. Because when you're, and what I mean by that is, when, it can be anything. I mean, for example, when your mind is at peace and when you get net positive happiness from whatever you are doing, that thing is always a success. Now, even if it might conventionally be not as successful as what, let's say, others might think, for you, it is always a success. And invariably, it becomes something which you are proud of and gives you immense internal peace and happiness. So I think whatever gives you that, now it can be different things for different people. So, but that is what I think one should focus on. And that's actually been my mantra. But of course, it's come by trial and error. I have done things in my life which possibly I realized later that maybe don't give me as much peace and happiness, and with time I have dropped it. But I guess it is a trial and error, after which you come to this realization and understanding that ultimately that peace of mind and net positive happiness is most important in life.
That's amazing that you say that. But tell me, Ameya, I'm enjoying this conversation so much, because I think in many ways I sort of see so much of like-mindedness between you and me and our approach and our sort of prospect on life. Tell me, Ameya, what are your views on karma?
I'll tell you, take a step back first, and I'll tell you what my views on luck is, right? Because I believe we are all energy. Humans are energy, life is energy. And, Newton's law of energy states that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So, when people say I have good luck or I have bad luck, I actually disagree with that. I believe that good luck is the positive energy that you give out that comes back to you as what we call good luck. Similarly, if we think negative and we give negative energy out, that comes back to you as bad luck. So this good luck and bad luck are human concepts, is actually all energy. And that's the same thing if you extend further, it goes into karma. Because in a way, karma, if you give good energy out and good deeds, it comes back to you as good karma. And so is, the converse is also true. So I think that, I would say energy essentially, call it luck, call it karma. One should always have good, positive energy and keep giving it out, keep doing good deeds. And I promise you, it always, and again, you should do it without expectation. But generally, when you give out positive energy, it invariably comes back to you.
Wow. Believe it or not, I'm getting goosebumps right now. I've actually written an article on what you're talking about right now. I'll probably send it to you at a later stage, but I again couldn't agree more, right? I mean, we keep talking about spirituality in the corporate world and the importance of spirituality, and you know, listening to you, it was so important for me to understand your belief and your views on karma, and you hit it spot on, right? Ameya, you've written this book, right? And I've seen it being talked about in various platforms all over. You're speaking about about your new book. Tell me what is the one thing that triggered you to write this book, and why Rock Babas?
So you know, the Rock Babas is a book of 9 short stories, and so I've been a writer for most of my life, but it's only that, you know, with the lockdown last year in India, because of COVID, and what happened is that I ended up being locked in a house for 2 months, and it actually gave me the time to sit down and write a full length, it's 9 short stories, but it's as long as a novel. So, you know, if you ask me, the stories are based all around the world. So there's one story based in Colombia, there's one story based in the US, actually there are 2 in the US. And these are all about human journeys, about the characters across countries, across religions, across genders, and the trials and tribulations that they go through, and how they find the inner fortitude to overcome them. So in a way, the underlying theme of the book is spirituality. And the Rock Babas and Other Stories is the name of the book. And the Rock Babas, the eponymous story, is actually based in Nepal. So it's amazing that you ask me about that story. But so that story is about a Swiss hotelier, a very successful Swiss hotelier who is, someone who he's also a mountaineer, and he's quite entrenched in his own culture and is not very open to understanding or looking at other cultures from around the world. And he is, you know, climbing the Kanchenjunga, and all throughout he's climbing, you know, he keeps coming in contact with the Limbu people and the other people of the area. And he never really understands the culture, he considers it mumbo jumbo. And of course, I also try to focus on the indigenous people of the area, and in all the stories I've done that. And also, for example, you know, it is one of the subplots of the stories, I actually spoke about not just the Sherpas, but also the cooks, the porters. I mean, think of it, right? A guy climbs a mountain once a year. These guys climb several times in the same season, and nobody really talks about them. The porters, the cooks, who actually climb all the way almost to the summit along with the mountaineers, and they do it over and over again. I mean, imagine how phenomenal athletes these people are, you know. But anyway, so coming back to the story, so while climbing he gets lost in an avalanche, and then he wakes up in the ashram of these secretive rock babas who play rock music and connect with the higher spirit that is in the world. And the rest of the story is about how his journey with them and what happens to him, and I don't want to spoil the ending. But that's the theme again. It's a spiritual story. It's a story of his journey. It's a story of his soul and what happens to him.
No, this is amazing. I just can't wait to read it, you know, and I'm sort of seeing Rock Baba as, let's say, a corporate leader, you know, him climbing his own Everest or climbing his own mountains along with his team who's doing in and out, and I can see a large context to that perspective as well. But Ameya, tell me, you know, I've always been a firm believer that, you know, South Asia, right, the Indian subcontinent, over the last 20 years has been largely disintegrated, you know, the previous generations due to politics or not too much through business partnerships has not been able to grow together as one large economy, as one large territory. And a lot of people sort of blame, there's always a blame game that, oh, you know, it's India who's not taking care of Bangladesh, Nepal, Bhutan, etc., etc. But I think the newer generation sees, the newer generation of economists, newer generation of politicians, newer generation of entrepreneurs see that completely different. And I'm a firm believer of the power of one South Asia, you know. What are your views on that?
You know, I think if you see that, firstly, I mean, other than certain areas where we might have had border issues, let's say Pakistan. But other than that, if you see South Asia as a cohesive unit, has a common culture, has a common identity. And if you see, like, people in Europe, I mean, what does France and Czech Republic have in common? Nothing. Except the fact that they're all now members of the EU. So think of the power of the EU, the largest trading bloc that created, despite having disparate cultures, disparate languages, and we have a common cult, common identity as culture, I know, and very important, be a strong bloc. How ASEAN has been very, very simple, and I can create this common bond within between India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, Bhutan, Maldives. Actually, percent of almost 200, sorry, about 2 billion people, humanity, and the ethic not. There are only two areas in the world where religion is on. One is Israel and Palestine, and the other is where we are today, on the modern Nepal and all created in our are a spiritual leader for economy, not try to complete you. Politically, economically, culturally, we need to common occasion identity. Whenever I Nepal, I feel so Nepal because we have grown up, with Nepal. So it's important for us to build, common grievance with that.
Okay, sorry, Ami, the line was a little unclear, but just a quick question. We're all aspiring, growing leaders in our own rights, right? Tell me the one person you look up to globally in any field and why. Just that one line, who's the person and why do you look up to him? Or what as a mentor, as an idol?
I really admire, as I've grown older, I've really started admiring, spiritual leaders, guys who have had the ability to, live a temporal life of money or of, and I think I really admire them. So if you look back in history, someone I draw a lot of inspiration from is Buddha. I think, got Siddhartha and Gautama Buddha in terms of his transformation from being this prince into what he eventually became. But also, I think in the Buddha, there is a great lesson for us to learn, because I think Buddha preached the lack of idol worship. He preached the fact that one should follow the middle path. And his followers over time have actually gone into idol worship as well, including worship, something which he wanted to move away from. So I think we need to learn a lot from the Buddha, but also realize the limitations of what can happen of your message with time. So I think most important is to be at peace with yourself. Again, coming back to that, do the best that you can. Give this message of love and peace to the world. And, I'm sure that as long as it can make a difference to some people, you've achieved a phenomenal thing.
That's absolutely great, Amir. Thank you so much for your time, for your knowledge, for your wisdom. This has been so amazing. These are things which I personally would be talking about as well. And I guess, that's the power of, two minds sort of engaging with each other and agreeing on each other. And I couldn't have agreed with you more on this. So thank you so much, Amir, for this podcast. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Nirvana. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to meeting you soon, and looking forward to also visiting Nepal.
Thank you, Amir.